So here we are on this miserable, icy, ridiculously misty winter night, yet all these people show up in this library in Millburn to hear about something that happened 70 years ago, these FDR fireside chats. Why are we sitting here tonight caring about this?
Well, I think, you know, Franklin Roosevelt, like other presidents, like John Kennedy, like Ronald Reagan, he still exerts a hold over our imagination. I mean, I was born 10 years after Franklin Roosevelt died, and yet, in many ways, I think of him as one of my presidents. And I think it's because of his charisma. It's also the times. He was president during the Depression. He was president during a world war. So he was a figure the country rallied around, and amazingly enough, still rallies around.
Was there something about the medium that made him seem larger than life?
Absolutely. The man was made for radio. He had this wonderful voice. He was able to communicate a warmth that no one had ever heard before. Remember, before 1930 or so, American presidents spoke and newspaper reporters wrote down the words, and that's how the message was communicated. Now, thanks to this miracle of radio, the president could speak to individual Americans, and that's how it sounded. It sounded as though Franklin Roosevelt was talking to each one of the 150 million Americans who were tuning into these broadcasts.
What year was the first fireside chat?
The first fireside chat was literally the day after his inauguration in March, because they inaugurated in March back then, of 1933, where he took to the airwaves to explain to people why he was about to shut down all of the banks. And he understandably figured, if I'm going to take this drastic measure, I should communicate it directly to the American people. And he explained it in ways that I think people said, okay, well, we're not sure that this is the right thing to do, but we have confidence in him.
And the idea of this fire, whether it's fictional or not, was to put people at ease?
Yes. I mean, I think that he had this notion that people were going to be listening by the fireside. Of course, how many Americans really had firesides?
Oh, so he wasn't supposed to be the one by the fire.
No. Oh. He, in fact, was in the basement of the White House.
He's summoning people to their
parlors,
their fires.
Exactly. And what's interesting is that he actually had an audience for these, too, because he didn't want to be speaking to an empty room. So staff was sort of conscripted to come down to the basement and wait for him. He was brought down in his wheelchair by an elevator and then brought in front of a table, and microphone was on, and off he went.
I know that in the 70s and 80s, Mayor Ed Koch in New York would see a coach to help him give speeches, to help him talk to reporters, to increase his ability to sound sharp. Did anybody school FDR on his speaking ability, or was that such a new medium at that point that he just went for it?
I think it was such a new medium. He created the medium in many ways. There were no spin doctors back then. There were no professional coaches. What you heard was what you got. And interestingly enough, too, I think Roosevelt was responsible for writing. I mean, he took great pride in writing some of these speeches. He often joked with reporters that, well, you know, I was a journalist too, because he had been president of the Harvard Crimson.
Well, you know, he almost sounds like an old school radio broadcaster.
He sure does. Yes, he does.
And how important was that baritone voice? If he had a less profound, commanding voice, would he still be remembered for these fireside chats?
Probably not. And, you know, it's interesting that, for example, Abraham Lincoln was said to have sort of a thin, you know, not very deep voice, and that, you know, people think that had he been president in a radio age, that, for example, the Gettysburg Address may not have had the power that it had because of his speaking voice, but Roosevelt was blessed. And remember, too, that Americans in 1928 had tuned in to really the first radio campaign was the cycle before Roosevelt came in. And the voice that they heard so often was Al Smith, who sounded like a guy from the Lower East Side, and he was. So if you were in Oklahoma listening to Al Smith, you were saying, I can't vote for that guy. I don't understand what he's saying.
Yeah, it's interesting, the power of radio. Much has been said about the Nixon-Kennedy debates and how the radio audience felt that Nixon won, where the television audience was enamored with the view of this good-looking man, Kennedy. I recall listening to Rudy Giuliani at the Republican National Convention a few years back, driving in the car on the way home and thinking he's doing a fantastic bang-up job. And then I got out of my car, walked into my house, put the television on, and I saw him, and he looked nervous. He looked, his gestures reminded me of Hitler, actually. And it was really, it took me aback. Do you think that if FDR had a television camera on him, the way that people do now in the media, would that have taken away from his radio presence, from the fireside chats, from the power of his performance?
Oh, I think absolutely. I think his performance was audio. There actually are some newsreel clips of Roosevelt reading his fireside chats, and you can see he's not looking at the camera, he's not gesturing, he looks very wooden. So I think if you were to see one of Roosevelt's fireside chats, you might very well wonder, well, where's the magic? The magic was in that box.
How is Barack Obama as a speech performer?
I think Barack Obama is probably right up there with the greats in terms of performance. The problem I think that Obama has right now is that he's so careful and so measured that we don't have any ringing phrases. I mean, there were a few from the campaign, but think about anything in the 2 years since. He's been, I think, too careful, and I think that has inhibited his style, as opposed to John Kennedy and as opposed to Ronald Reagan, who sort of loved giving speeches, loved summoning the country to his cause. Obama hasn't been able to do that just yet, but he's certainly more than capable of it.
Do you see any up-and-comers as speech makers?
You know, I think, regrettably, I think the art of giving a speech is going the way of newspaper journalism.
Or radio. Go ahead, say it.
I mean, I think that the intense importance of speeches just isn't there anymore. For example, nobody gives a keynote speech at a convention anymore. That's sort of gone. Mm. And I think that how many times has Obama summoned the nation to the living room to deliver an important televised speech?
Last week was
right.
One of maybe the only one.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. The presidents don't communicate that way anymore. And frankly, I think that's too bad, because it's particularly in the times that we live in, if we're going to be fighting wars, or if we're going to be trying to rebuild the national economy, I think you have to rally the country around you. And how do you do that? You can do it with images, but history shows that you do it with words, too.
Although, you know, the accolades that the president received from the speech last week might make him think, I should do this more often. I wonder if it will be a comeback.
If I were his chief of staff, I would say, Mr. President, you were terrific, and you're going to do it again next week, and the week after that. Well, we don't want people to get sick of you, but you certainly need to reintroduce yourself to the American people, because they like you, they like what they heard, and we have an election coming up.
You mentioned during your presentation that you suspect that perhaps President Reagan, when he had his comeback after the bad performance with the Mondale debate, that maybe he was taking a page out of FDR's own comeback by drinking in the applause, as you put it. And I heard your reference to Fala and how he defended his dog, and checkers came to mind. Was Nixon doing the same thing? Was Nixon taking a page from FDR?
Do you know, I rarely ever put Richard Nixon and Franklin Roosevelt in the same sentence, but now that you have, I mean, it's certainly possible. Nixon was a shrewd man. I mean, you don't get to be president without being shrewd. And he surely would have remembered the Fala speech. I mean, he may have been actually overseas, because he served in the armed forces during the war. But, you know, the Fala speech was such a memorable moment. And a guy as shrewd as Nixon, yeah, I think he was thinking, yeah, I'm going to do my Fala thing now.
All right, well, in 40 years from now, or 70 years from now, will we still be talking about the fireside chats?
Oh, I think so. I mean, we're still talking about them now. It's been 70 years. There's no reason to think, I hope, there's no reason to think that the memory of Franklin Roosevelt and his leadership will have faded 70 years from now. I don't believe that.
Terry, congratulations on the book and
on
the nice presentation tonight.
Thank you, Wayne.
Thank you very much. All right. Very nicely done.
Good job,
sir. Your questions are brilliant.